Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
Hi everyone, this is just a quick message for all the regular Reality Check podcast listeners to let you know that unfortunately there was no podcast made of our very special 50th episode last week. The show did go to air and we had 2 hours of lots of fun discussion, but unfortunately I later discovered that the computer that normally records everything broadcast on Joy 94.9 was malfunctioning for a few hours last Monday night. And unfortunately the show was not recorded. So, sadly, I wasn't able to make the podcast of that show. So, sorry about that. But never fear, because a lot of the topics we talked about, I want to bring up again on the podcast-only shows of Reality Check coming up over the next few months, and which you'll hear a bit more about during this episode of Reality Check.
Hello and welcome to Reality Check. Today is Monday, the 20th of September 2010, and I'm your host, Tony Pittman. And this is episode 51 of Reality Check here on Joy 94.9. Reality Check is a show designed to give you a healthy dose of reality. And we do that by promoting the art of critical thinking and skeptical analysis. Each week we bring you a roundup of LGBT news, followed by an in-depth analysis of an issue related to the paranormal or the pseudoscientific, and finally we wrap up each show with a movie review. On today's show, after our LGBT news roundup, we're going to have a look at a person who's been labelled as a hero of the LGBT community in Australia, Dr. Keren Phelps. She's a former president of the Australian Medical Association and probably Australia's most famous TV doctor. So a great role model, right? Well, maybe not, because Dr. Phelps is also a big-time promoter of some highly dubious alternative therapies that have been proven not to work. So could it be that this supposed role model for the community is actually endangering people's lives? Well, that's what we'll try to find out. Then in our movie review, we'll have a look at a new documentary from the United States, whose name pretty much says it all. Joan Rivers, A Piece of Work. So for all that and more, stay tuned here on Reality Check on Joy 94.9. Okay, now just before we get into our news roundup, I should mention quickly that Reality Check is going to take a rest during the months of October, November, and December. At least a rest from the airwaves. So there'll be no regular shows broadcast on Joy 94.9 for those 3 months. I will, however, be producing the occasional podcast version during that time. So if you'd like to subscribe to the podcast of Reality Check, you can do that at realitycheckonline.net. So next week will be the last week of broadcast shows for 2010, then after that will be a podcast-only show for the next 3 months. Okay, now here's our LGBT news roundup for the last week or so. And let's head first to Russia, where an extraordinary event last week, like something from a Cold War spy novel, showed that, unfortunately, the Russian authorities really haven't changed that much since the days of the Soviet Union. And I'm talking here about the case of the abduction by Russian security agents of Nikolai Alexeyev, the most prominent LGBT rights activist in Russia. Nikolai himself, now thankfully free and back in Moscow, has written a gripping account of his abduction at Moscow airport, followed by 2 days of interrogation at secret locations. I thoroughly recommend going to the website of UK Gay News and reading his account. Just Google UK Gay News, English translation of Russian gay activist kidnapping. Anyway, basically what happened was last Wednesday afternoon, September 15th, Nikolai went to Moscow airport to catch a flight to Geneva for some meetings he was due to attend. Now, after going through customs and immigration, he was approached by a number of Russian internal affairs agents who first escorted him to a small room for interrogation, then forced him into a car and drove him to another town where they interrogated him further and kept him locked up for 24 hours. He was then driven secretly to another town for further interrogation before finally being let go after 48 hours in detention. Nikolai then discovered that he was in the city of Tula, about 200 kilometers south of Moscow, and took a bus straight back to Moscow, arriving on Saturday morning, to the great relief of his worried friends. During the whole time he was abducted, everyone was extremely worried because no one had any idea where he was. And to confuse matters even further, the Russian agents used Nikolai's mobile phone to send false messages from him, claiming that he had dropped all the court cases that he was pursuing and was now in Minsk in Belarus asking for political asylum. All a complete fabrication. Now, Nikolai has been one of the main organizers of the LGBT pride parades in Moscow for the last few years. Every one of those parades has been banned by the authorities. And each time a parade has been banned, Nikolai has brought a case against Russia in the European Court of Human Rights. So there are now a number of cases in the pipeline, all yet to be decided. And during all the time that he was in detention, the security agents, as well as abusing him and humiliating him with all kinds of homophobic slurs, they were also demanding that he drop all those cases in the European Court of Human Rights. And that's what their fabricated phone messages were supposedly about. Fortunately, even after this traumatic event, Nikolai's resolve to continue those cases is even stronger than ever. And in fact, Nikolai and other activists are still planning to go ahead with a protest tomorrow against the homophobic mayor of Moscow, Yuri Luzhkov. Good on them, I say, that's real courage. Still, a very disturbing case there and one that speaks volumes about the situation for human rights in Russia today, particularly for LGBT people. Okay, let's stay in Europe now for our next news item, but head west to the United Kingdom, where everybody's favourite pontiff, Pope Benedict XVI, has been making an historic 4-day visit. But not everyone has been delighted about this taxpayer-funded trip. And so on Saturday, September 18th, 20,000 people took to the streets of London to protest the Pope's visit, and particularly some of his positions, such as his rampant homophobia, his ridiculous claims that condoms lead to the spread of HIV, and his handling of the child abuse scandal within the church. The protesters marched through central London and then rallied outside Whitehall, where they heard speakers including a number of prominent atheists, such as evolutionary biologist Richard Dawkins, science writer Ben Goldacre, and LGBT rights campaigner Peter Tatchell. Dawkins, who had wanted to make a citizen's arrest of the Pope, called the pontiff, quote, an enemy of humanity. Richard Dawkins certainly pulls no punches. And finally, briefly, in other news, let's head across the Atlantic to the United States, where the infamous don't ask, don't tell policy is hitting the headlines once again. Now, we reported last week on the wonderful federal court decision in California that found that policy to be unconstitutional. Well, moving from the judicial to the legislative front, the US Senate is due to vote on the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell tomorrow, September 21st. It looks like it's going to be a very tight vote, with Republican John McCain threatening to block the repeal with a filibuster. Let's hope he doesn't succeed, but whatever happens, dear listener, you can be sure that we'll keep you up to date with every development right here on Reality Check. Okay, that's all the news we have time for today. Let's listen to a song now, and when we come back, we'll undertake a skeptical examination of the beliefs and achievements of celebrity MD, Dr. Karen Phelps. Is she really a wonderful role model for the LGBT community, or maybe a deluded promoter of potentially dangerous forms of quackery? To find out the answer, stay tuned here on Reality Check on Joy 94.9.
All voices, our voices.
Joy 94.9.
All day, all day, all night. Joy 94.9.
Welcome back to Reality Check. I'm Tony Pittman and the station is Joy 94.9. And the song you just heard there was Me Enamora by Colombian singer Juanes. Okay, we now move into the part of the show where we undertake a skeptical analysis of a subject related to pseudoscience or the paranormal. And tonight we're going to take a closer look at someone who's often considered a hero for the LGBT community, Dr. Karen Phelps. Dr. Phelps is undoubtedly one of Australia's most famous lesbians. In fact, she was probably the most famous lesbian in Australia until our new finance minister came along, Penny Wong. Anyway, Karen Phelps has been giving medical advice on TV since the 1980s. She created a bit of a stir when she left her husband and came out as a lesbian in 1993, and then when she announced her relationship with her current partner, primary school teacher Jackie Stricker, in 1997. The couple had a commitment ceremony in New York in 1998, and since then have appeared together as a celebrity couple in countless TV interviews, particularly in 2002 when they did the rounds of the TV chat shows promoting a book about their lives and their relationship, entitled Karen and Jackie. So, being so famous and so open about her relationship with another woman, Karen Phelps has undoubtedly done a lot of good in increasing visibility for LGBT people and same-sex relationships. She and her partner Jackie are almost a perfect model couple that campaigners for same-sex marriage can use when wanting to point to a stable, happy same-sex couple that most people can identify with and relate to. So Karen Phelps has been wonderful when it comes to promoting a public face for same-sex relationships. So that's Dr. Phelps' personal life in a nutshell. What about her professional life? Well, Although she had been famous as a TV doctor for many years, what really made her very famous and gave her a lot of credibility was her position as federal president of the Australian Medical Association from 2000 to 2003. She was both the first woman and the first openly LGBT person to hold this post. Nowadays, she continues to appear regularly as a medical expert on a range of TV chat shows and lifestyle shows. And she also runs two medical clinics in Sydney, the Cooper Street Clinic, and one simply called U Clinic, with a U. And on top of that, she's now also the president of the Australasian Integrative Medicine Association. So a wonderful role model for everyone to look. Wait, hang on. What was that last one? The president of the Australasian Integrative Medicine Association? What's that all about? Well, according to its website, this is an organization that promotes the integration of complementary medicine and therapies within current mainstream medical practice. Interesting. I wonder who's on the board of that association. Well, let's have a look. Well, apart from Dr. Phelps, the president, you also have a variety of, homeopaths, acupuncturists, naturopaths, herbalists, hypnotherapists, and practitioners of Ayurvedic medicine, bioenergetic medicine, and even a practitioner of quantum touch. Whatever that is, sounds fabulous, doesn't it? So, hang on, what's going on here? Dr. Karen Phelps, the former president of the Australian Medical Association, the association for real doctors who practice science-based medicine, hanging out with a bunch of homeopaths and other quacks? Surely this can't be true. Well, dear listener, I'm afraid to say it is true. And that's the reason why in 2008, Dr. Karen Phelps was the winner of the Australian Skeptics Bent Spoon Award. This is the award given annually to the worst promoter of pseudoscientific or paranormal beliefs. And it looks like Karen Phelps was actually quite a deserving winner. Because when you start to dig a little deeper, the story gets much worse. Let's take a look at one of those clinics she runs in Sydney, for example, the U Clinic in Surry Hills. Just one look at the website and the heart sinks. Because not only are there a number of GPs working there, but also a number of so-called natural therapists, like homeopaths, acupuncturists, herbalists, shiatsu therapists, practitioners of traditional Chinese medicine, and, God help us, naturopaths. And how interesting, one of the naturopaths at U Clinic recommends using hydrotherapy. Yes, those alternating hot and cold showers so popular in the 19th century and that work so well to clear up your tuberculosis. Also, there on the main webpage at uclinic.com.au, you can see a link offering intravenous nutritional therapies, involving high-dose injections of vitamins and minerals, supposedly as therapies for treating diseases. There's also a link to their, quote, integrative cancer care page for patients looking for alternative forms of cancer treatment. That's what it says on the website. And one of the naturopaths working at Dr. Phelps' clinic says that she has, quote, a special interest in naturopathic oncology. Really, Karen? Alternative treatments for cancer? Naturopathic oncology? You're really stooping that low? Well, as depressing as it sounds, dear listener, it seems that she really is. And the story gets worse. Because not only is Karen Phelps acting unethically by offering unproven and even disproven therapies at her clinic, but she's also been accused of acting unethically in a financial sense as well. Because you see, it turns out that on the ground floor of her wonderful U clinic, Karen Phelps owns a shop that sells the whole range of herbs and supplements and so-called complementary medicines that the practitioners in Dr. Phelps' clinic are recommending their patients take. So, in other words, the patient sees a doctor or naturopath upstairs and gets a list of recommended supplements they should take. And then they just have to head downstairs to buy them from the shop, owned by, oh, guess who? Dr. Karen Phelps. How convenient. And what a brilliant business plan, Karen. Charge your patients for the consultation and then charge them again for the supplements that most likely they don't even need. But hey, when they get told by a TV celebrity like you, Dr. Phelps, well, who are they to question the wisdom of your advice? I wonder if Dr. Phelps knows how to spell the expression conflict of interest. Maybe she should look it up on her iPad or some other expensive device that I'm sure she's been able to afford from all the money she's raking in as a result of her conflict of interest. I should also add, just in case you're wondering, that this particular kind of conflict of interest, doctors themselves selling the very products they recommend, is prohibited in Victoria. Not in New South Wales, though, it would seem. And by the way, dear listener, just in case you're wondering, Dr. Phelps charges $280 for an hour-long consultation. Like I said, it's a very good business model. Also, dear listener, I'm sure you'll be interested to know that Dr. Phelps was a consultant to the vitamin company Metagenics and appeared in a number of TV commercials for them. The Australian Medical Association used to have a policy against these kinds of commercial endorsements by doctors. But Dr. Phelps successfully campaigned to have that policy changed in March 2003 when she was still AMA president. Oh, how convenient. I wonder though, do you think that maybe Dr. Phelps might sell Metagenics products in her health food shop and might even recommend her patients take them? I don't know. I've never been to her shop. I'm just conjecturing here. Well, let's leave the financial issues for a while and come back to Dr. Phelps' health advice, particularly what she gives on TV and radio. And, dear listener, I'm afraid to say it's a bit depressing. For example, there was the time she went on AM on ABC Radio earlier this year and appeared to defend homeopathy, saying that it wasn't fair to throw out an entire system of healthcare because there hasn't been enough research done on it yet to show that it works. Yes, dear listener, homeopathy, the most implausible and absurd of all the so-called alternative medicines. It still needs more research, according to Dr. Phelps. In fact, Dr. Phelps often comes across more like a naturopath than a medical doctor. And like a naturopath, she seems very fond of the idea that you can treat illness through high doses of vitamins and minerals and changes in diet. Now, let's be clear here. She's not saying simply that a balanced diet and adequate nutrition is important to maintaining good health. That's perfectly sound advice backed up by evidence. She's saying that changes in diet and large doses of vitamins can cure and treat illness. And except for a few very rare cases, this is not backed up by any scientific evidence whatsoever. It seems she's picked up this belief from the influence of naturopaths, not through any scientific papers that she's been reading. Now, why don't we have a listen to one of Dr. Phelps' numerous TV appearances in which she gives some of this highly dubious nutritional advice? Here's a clip from Channel 7's morning show Sunrise from April this year. The segment was entitled, "I Cured My Son's Autism with Diet," and features a mother, Vicky Leon, with her 5-year-old son, Nicholas, and Dr. Karen Phelps. The hosts first chat with Vicky the mum, who tells the story of how Nicholas was diagnosed with autism at age 2. To supposedly treat the autism, they decided to change his diet and removed all dairy and gluten, as well as artificial colourings and preservatives. And apparently, according to the mum, changes started to occur within 24 hours, and Nicholas started to come out of the haze of his autism. 10 days later, he started speaking, which he'd never done before. The way Vicky describes it, it certainly gives the impression that simple changes in diet work as some kind of miracle cure for autism. So when Karen Phelps finally got the chance to speak after Vicky, what did she say to the hundreds of thousands of viewers, many of them with autistic children themselves? Did she point out that there is absolutely no scientific evidence or clinical trial results to support the idea that autism can be treated through diet? Did she urge parents to take an approach based on science and evidence rather than wishful thinking? Well, let's have a listen. First, you'll hear a few words from Vicky the mum, and then Karen Phelps will have her say.
We went and got a lot of tests done. We got faeces, blood and urine tests done, and we found out that not only is he low in many vitamins and minerals, but also he was very toxic. His mercury level, which should have been between 4 and 9, was 27. So the doctor put us on supplements and probiotics and oils, and we've been doing that for 3 years, and this is what he's got now.
Karen, what do you think of this? Is sort of medically, is this the way that you can sort of ease the symptoms of autism?
When you look at the number of families who are struggling with autism, who are being told that this is an incurable condition, obviously people are looking for answers. And there are so many anecdotal reports now about improvements with children who are changing their diets that I think we really have to sit up and take notice of this. Mm. And there are some specialist doctors who are trained in this particular way of managing children. It does require a lot of care and attention and dedication by the parents, but that compared to struggling with a child who has untreated autism is really almost it's a joy. And to trial a child on a gluten-free, dairy-free diet for a month to see if it makes a difference to them, to then seek advice about appropriate supplements like the probiotics, fish oil, which is the omega-3, and some zinc, magnesium and so forth, but to get the right doses and for the right child, we're looking at probably a combination of environmental, neurological, digestive problems, and the behavioural problems are most likely a result of all of those issues. Many of these children do seem to have food allergies that need to be tested properly and assessed, and those foods eliminated from their diets under supervision.
Huh? What? This is Dr. Karen Phelps, former head of the Australian Medical Association, recommending probiotics, fish oil, zinc and magnesium to treat autism? Are you sure you really went to medical school, Dr. Phelps? Maybe you did a course in naturopathy down at your local community college and got confused and thought it was a degree in medicine. Because from what you said, it certainly sounds like it. And did you notice that Dr. Phelps even managed to throw in a reference to food allergies there, something the naturopaths love to talk about? Notice also how the mother threw in the old furphy about high levels of toxins and mercury, something the anti-vaccination nutcases love to rant on about. And Dr. Phelps didn't say anything to counter all this dangerous misinformation. In fact, she seemed to endorse everything the mother said. And worst of all, she even specifically mentioned that what Vicky just said was an anecdote. She used that word. And then she went on to say that we can't ignore anecdotes like this. They're very good evidence. It's as if the last 150 years of advances in science just passed her by. The whole point of science and the scientific method is to eliminate all the biases contained in simple anecdotes. Things like wishful thinking, confirmation bias, cognitive dissonance. Science is specifically designed to avoid all these and to try to come to an understanding of what's really going on. But Karen Phelps just plows on, oblivious to the basic principles of science and critical thinking. Now, I mentioned earlier that Karen Phelps was awarded the Bent Spoon Award by the Australian Skeptics back in 2008. So it seems I'm not the only one who's been appalled by some of the things Dr. Phelps has been saying on national television and radio. So to find out a bit more about the award and why they decided to give it to Dr. Phelps, I called up Peter Bowditch, the immediate past president of the Australian Skeptics, and the man who runs the skeptical website, ratbags.com. So let's have a listen now to what Peter had to say. All right, joining us on the line now from Wentworth Falls in the beautiful Blue Mountains in New South Wales is the ratbag himself, Peter Bowditch. Peter, how are you?
I'm very well, thanks.
Excellent, excellent. Okay, Peter, so as you know, this evening we are talking about Dr. Karen Phelps, and I understand you have a bit of familiarity with the good doctor, and that in fact she was the lucky recipient of the Australian Skeptics Bent Spoon Award back in 2008. So can you tell me a bit about that?
Yeah, well, the Bent Spoon Award is an annual award given by the Australian Skeptics. The words they actually use say it's to the perpetrator of the most preposterous piece of paranormal or pseudoscientific piffle.
Right.
Dr. Phelps won it for her current adoption of what can be called alternative medicine. Obviously, that's an issue for Australian skeptics and for me personally. Mm-hmm. But she was particularly chosen because of she gives them a celebrity status, if you like. As a previous president of the Australian Medical Association, she isn't just any old person that appears saying, oh, I'm pushing holistic medicine, I'm pushing herbalism or so forth. This is a properly qualified doctor who was considered by her peers to be the sort of person that they would like to speak on their behalf. She moves on from that, and now she's representing the alternative medicine industry, because I actually take the view that there is no such thing as an alternative medicine. There is medicine, and there are things which have not been proved to work.
Mm-hmm.
There's no alternative engineering, and we don't have alternative aeronautical engineers building aeroplanes by their own rules.
Yeah.
I hope we don't.
Good analogy, that's right. Yeah, well, I mean, that's really the problem with her, that she is such a high-profile person in the media. She had a very authoritative position within the real medical community, yeah, if you like, the AMA. She was the president. And she uses that authority and she goes on all the morning shows and the talk shows promoting all kinds of dubious so-called complementary and alternative medicine, as you said.
And not only that, I mean, she actually is good television. I mean, she's smart, she knows how to do an interview, she comes across somebody who knows what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But in the background all the time is, this person used to represent all doctors in Australia, and therefore doctors think that maybe she has something to say. Well, she did, maybe when she was president of the AMA. It's a different situation now, I think. Now, I don't know specifically what sort of modalities or healing things she pushes, and I presume it's the sort of generalised type, things that aren't real medicine, it's herbs, it's acupuncture, it's all those sort of things. But I think the real problem with Karen Phelps is the fact that she is this celebrity-type person with this very good background, and therefore can't just be dismissed as some nutter who's invented a new method of curing cancer.
Right, yeah, she carries all that weight, all that gravitas of being the former president of the AMA.
That's
yeah.
Right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, well, yeah, I have seen her, on programs like Sunrise and things, promoting diets and new supplements and vitamins for treating things like autism and things.
That's when it starts to get dangerous. I don't mind people promoting vitamins, the greatest danger to taking vitamins, other than the things like excess vitamin A and things like that, which can cause you harm, is extensive urine and a waste of money.
Yeah.
Most of us get all the vitamins we need from our diet. The only people, I think, really that should be told they need a vitamin supplement are true vegans who may not get enough vitamin B12, but the rest of us, providing we're eating a balanced diet, we're getting those vitamins. Someone coming out and saying that vitamins, you should take vitamins for wellness, is really causing no harm at all. If they say you should take vitamins to cure autism or you should take vitamins to prevent cancer, I think that's a different thing.
Right, yeah, and that's where she crosses the line, basically. Yeah, can you just sum it up in a nutshell from the skeptic's point of view? What is the problem with what she's doing with promoting these alternative and complementary therapies?
I think it's giving credibility to non-scientific things, and they like the word complementary. I have no trouble with someone that's continuing to take their medication for cancer and also going away and eating some herbs or something. It's when it's treated as a true alternative, and when people say, oh, it's going to be very expensive to have that particular treatment, or I can go to my health food shop and I can get these particular vitamins or this particular bundle of things, or I can go and get acupuncture, and then they give up the conventional medication or treatment. That's where the danger lies, I think. So that's what worries me. I don't really care if people say, oh, look, take vitamin supplements to add to whatever else you're doing. That's reasonably harmless.
Mm.
But when they say, take vitamin supplements instead of, that's when it starts to become dangerous.
Right. Well, often they don't even need to say that explicitly, but that is kind of implicit or understood, or else they'll delay going for the real treatment because they'll think the vitamins will work.
I saw a study, it was done a few years ago by oncologists at Westmead Hospital, and they found an increase in the rate of death of breast cancer in Australia. And when they looked at it, they said the biggest thing they found, or the main cause that they thought they could detect, was late presentation at doctors for women with breast cancer who had already tried several alternative treatments.
Right, that's interesting.
And then when they finally figured that these things weren't working, the lumps getting bigger, then they would go to the doctor. But maybe they're 6 months or 12 months too late.
Yeah, right.
And now it's true, where if you can get it early, and they were saying that they had people who had they presented the first time they found a lump in their breast, gone to a doctor, they might have had to have a minor surgical procedure, or maybe some chemotherapy-type treatment, they'd be fine. They turn up, and by the time they get there, the cancer has advanced far more. It's not only in the breast, it may have spread to other parts of the body.
Mm-hmm.
They may have to do major surgery to fix it. And they actually thought that this... it seemed to be a major contributor to the increase of the death rate was the fact that women were presenting later, and almost invariably the reason was that they'd gone out and they'd sought some kind of alternative treatment first and been told by their practitioners, oh, doctors will just do cut, burn and poison.
Right, yeah, the typical criticism of so-called Western medicine or whatever they call it.
That's right. Well, I used to be a surfer back in the days before we knew about the dangers of sunlight.
Mm-hmm.
I've had two skin cancers removed, both of which by biopsy were proved later to be malignant.
Right.
I was quite happy with the cutting and burning. Worked for me.
Yeah, delighted with it, in fact, exactly. But that is interesting, that study. I mean, I guess it's really hard to know how prevalent it is, but certainly when people like Karen Phelps are promoting these dubious therapies as being effective, then it's logical to assume that people will rely on them often as a first point of call.
And often cases they're cheaper, they're more convenient.
Mm.
Most doctors are rushed. And this is a legitimate argument by a lot of the alternative medicine practitioners.
Mm.
If you go to a major medical centre, the doctor there, you've got a lot of people queuing up, the doctor's got to see a certain number of people a day to get his or her salary paid for. They simply can't afford to sit there and talk to you for an hour. Now, you're in and out, whereas you might go and see your local homeopath, and he might want to talk to you for an hour and a half and take histories and everything else.
Right.
And people feel they're getting more personal attention.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is a problem recognised by doctors. They know about this problem.
Mm.
I don't know what they can do about it.
No, it's a tricky one.
And so people will tend to say, well, I got much more sympathetic treatment from this person over here than the doctor. When I came in at the end of their shift in the medical centre, all day they've had people coming in there complaining about things, 80% of which get better by themselves anyway.
Yeah, that's right.
And I come in and with something that may look trivial but may not be, and the doctor dismisses them. But that's actually one of the other things, too, that alternative medicine succeeds with. Because of the vast majority of things, people get better from them anyway. They always say, well, the last thing I did was what made it work, what cured me. And so if I have a cold, for example, and I've got coughing and sneezing, and first day I take paracetamol and codeine tablets and and then the next day I try something else, and the very last day I have a cup of chamomile tea, and the next day I stop snoozing. I think, wow, I now know what cures cold.
Yeah, right, exactly.
And so because now, the vast majority of things that people have are actually self-limiting. Influenza can kill you, yes, but still the majority of people survive through influenza. They don't get pneumonia at the end. They're sick for a week or so, then they're back to work. And also people are taking two things. They tend to say, this is the one they believe that works. James Randi did a study a few years ago where they contacted people, I think, with cancer, several people with chronic diseases who were having alternative treatment. Mm-hmm. And in every case, they were saying that whatever the alternative was what was making them better. But right. Most cases, they continued to carry on with the conventional treatment.
Yeah.
So they had people who, for example, who said, oh, my type 1 diabetes has been cured by whatever I've been taking. Mm-hmm. But I still keep taking insulin because I can't bring myself to have enough faith. But I know I'm cured by it.
It creates the impression that the alternative thing worked when it was actually just the normal, regular medicine they were on. Yeah.
I mean, you see this often with people that are cured from cancer,
that
they'll say, oh, I was cured of cancer. But you find that they've actually completed three rounds of chemotherapy as well. Then at the end, they say, I was taking something else that made me better, but they've actually been through the treatment.
Right, yeah. All right, Peter, well, thank you very much for joining us on Reality Check.
Thank you for having me.
So there you have it, dear listeners, some opinions there on Dr. Karen Phelps and alternative medicine in general from the immediate past president of the Australian Skeptics, Peter Bowditch. So to conclude our discussion on Dr. Karen Phelps this evening, well, what can we say? Well, as a very high profile and widely respected lesbian woman, she may have done a great job in breaking down homophobia in Australia. And I'm sure that as a doctor, she's also benefited a lot of people. But unfortunately, all that good work is tarnished, in my opinion, by her seemingly uncritical acceptance of a wide range of so-called complementary and alternative medicines, and the beliefs associated with them. And I believe that by promoting these therapies, she creates the impression that such therapies are effective at treating illness, and therefore increases the likelihood that some people will rely on those therapies to treat serious illnesses. And we see people doing that all the time, turning to unproven alternative therapies to treat life-threatening illnesses. And Dr. Phelps, through her clinics and her appearances on TV, only promotes that kind of deluded belief. She is, therefore, in my opinion, endangering the lives of numerous people. And such behaviour is morally reprehensible and not worthy of the role model that many people take her for. And it also goes to show that just because someone is a doctor with a real medical degree doesn't mean they know anything about the scientific method or critical thinking. Now, just before we play our last song, if you have any questions or comments about something we've covered on the show, or maybe a topic you'd like us to cover, please feel free to send us an email. The address is realitychecktony@gmail.com. And visit our webpage too, that's realitycheckonline.net. Okay, let's listen to our final song, and when we come back, we'll get into this week's movie review.
Hey, I'm Darren Hayes, and you're on Joy, Australia's first gay and lesbian radio station.
Welcome back to Reality Check with me, Tony Pittman, on Joy 94.9, also streaming live at joy.org.au, and also available as a podcast to listen to anywhere in the world on your little pod. The song you just heard there was Come What May by Nicole Kidman and Ewan McGregor from the movie Moulin Rouge. Okay, it's movie review time here on Reality Check, and the movie up for review tonight is a new documentary from the United States, Joan Rivers, A Piece of Work. For over a year during 2008 and 2009, filmmaker Ricky Stern followed legendary comedian Joan Rivers with a camera and filmed pretty much everything that went on in her life during that year. And the result
is this revealing and fascinating documentary. Throughout her career, Joan Rivers has been an actress and a television presenter, but she's most famous for her stand-up comedy routines. She began appearing on TV in the 1960s, so that's well over 40 years now of success and fame and whopping paychecks. You'd think that now that she's 77, she might be ready to start to retire a little bit, live slightly less hectic life, put her feet up for a little while. But no. And this is the amazing revelation of this really insightful film. She just can't stop. She's addicted to being a star. And most surprisingly, she's still racked by self-doubt. Even now, after all these decades of performing, she gets nervous before she goes on stage. She's afraid that no one will like her. She's terrified of what the reviewers will say after she launches a new show. When she's about to perform at a variety show with a series of other famous comedians, she's racked by anxiety, thinking that they'll all be better than her, that she's not good enough. And after almost half a century in the industry, it's like she's a newcomer still finding her feet. It's quite extraordinary to watch. She's vulnerable and completely dependent on the approval of other people. She has a constant, unquenchable need for validation, basically. And this is what really impacted me most about this film. This really surprising insight into the psyche of a big comedy star like her. And for the whole film, you just watch her and her constant need for approval, for celebrity, to be constantly doing shows, doing interviews, appearing on TV, to be back on top, as she says. By the end of the film, I just wanted to grab her and say, Joan, it doesn't matter what people think. Be yourself. Go off to some mountain retreat in the Himalayas or somewhere and contemplate the vastness of the universe. And please, just relax. Let go. But, of course, you know that's never going to happen. If she hasn't learnt to let go by 77, I don't think she ever will. So I have to say, I found this documentary really compelling. Now, I didn't know that much about Joan Rivers before I saw it, actually, and I also have to confess, I'm not really crazy about her style of comedy either. But that didn't really affect my enjoyment of the movie, because what makes it really interesting is seeing someone of her fame and stature completely full of insecurities about everything she does. It makes you wonder how many other successful celebrities out there are similarly racked by self-doubts and insecurity. Probably quite a lot, I imagine. And most importantly, it shows that, well, guess what? Celebrities are no different from you or me. We all have self-doubts. We all have insecurities. Celebrities are probably just a bit better at hiding it than the rest of us. Well, that plus a kind of relentless persistence. If they take a fall, they just get up again, dust themselves off, and keep going. And Joan Rivers is certainly good at doing that. She's had a lot of falls in her career, but each time she just gets up again. As one interviewee says about Joan during the documentary, the thing that's made her so successful is that she knows that if you want to get struck by lightning, you have to stand out in the rain a long, long time. And Joan Rivers is very good at that, standing out there in the rain, taking everything the storm throws at her, waiting for those occasional moments when lightning strikes. And the amazing thing is, at 77, she shows no sign of wanting to come inside from out of the rain. Now, just before I wind up the show, I should mention one more time that next week will be Reality Check's last regular weekly show of the year here on Joy 94.9. I will, however, continue to produce a podcast-only version of the show every 2 or 3 weeks. So if you'd like to subscribe to the podcast, go to realitycheckonline.net. And that brings us to the end of the 51st episode of Reality Check on Joy 94.9. I hope you enjoyed the show. Remember to send any questions, comments, or feedback to realitychecktony@gmail.com and visit our website at realitycheckonline.net. And remember to tune in at 8 o'clock next Monday for episode 52. Coming up next, David presents An Awkward Pause. Have a great week, everyone. See you next week.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.